Hi, welcome to the Alaska Radio Reader Rambler, a monthly potpourri of literary snacks for the mind and interviews. I'm Sandy Harper here with my co-host Dick Reichman, and today we're doing something a little unusual. We're having an encore guest, Katie Ringhold, who was here earlier with a preview of the most amazing Alaska Historical Society conference, which was called Alaska Visionaries, Seekers, Leaders, and Dreamers. And it was such an amazing and wonderful experience. I wanted to share it with our radio listeners through Catherine's prism. And we are delighted to have Katie here as our not only celebrating a most successful conference, but is the new president of the Alaska Historical Society, which I would like to also share a little bit about that with you. And we also have the outgoing president for the last 3 years, Bruce Merrill, the Alaska Historical Society, who was also instrumental in the creation of the conference. And he's also been in charge from the beginning of a major regional treasure, the Alaskana Collection at the Lusac Library. And he himself is a regional treasure. And we welcome you too, Bruce. But first of all, obviously you guys must both be history buffs. So I kind of like to hear how you each originally became passionately, personally connected with the love of history. So, Bruce, well,
I could start. Sure. I moved to Juneau when I was 6 years old, before statehood, back in territorial days. And my parents came up from Oregon and said they'd give it a try for 2 years, and they're still there. And I'm still here.
Very familiar story.
And I don't know that I had a passion for history at the beginning, but I loved Alaska, certainly. And I think it took going away from Alaska to fully appreciate it. When I went to college outside and then when I was in the Army, I started reading Alaskan stuff while I was away from the state and couldn't wait to get back, and went through school. Got into library work and discovered that I really gravitated towards the Alaskan material, historical particularly, and just amazed by the richness of the history that we've had with the geography, the cultures, the different European groups who've come through, and then just the amazing events of the last century in Alaska particularly. So when the new Lusac Library was opening, I was able to reposition myself in the library, on the library staff, over to Lusac, and it's been just a great, great ride. We opened up in '86. A lot of people don't realize Lusac is so old, but it's been 22 years now, and I've been in the Alaska collection, able to build the collections, help people with Alaskan questions, and the Historical Society grew out of that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Tell
I mean, not
me
not
that.
Not the institution itself, but my interest in the Historical Society. Actually, I could touch on that a little bit. The Alaska Historical Society started, there was an original one way back in the 1890s in Sitka, and it lasted about 2 years, I think. But it was revived in 1967, in the year of the centennial of the purchase of Alaska from Russia. And there was a conference held, I believe, on the APU campus, AMU campus at that time. And over the next few years, it gradually coalesced into a permanent organization with an executive director. And we've been meeting regularly since the early 1970s. Every year we have an annual meeting, and that's what we just had here in Anchorage.
Was this particular annual meeting extraordinary and phenomenal and unusual because of the celebration of statehood? Are they all this wonderful?
Yes, they all are wonderful, but this certainly was something a little bit more extraordinary than what we have done in the past. First of all, I want to say thank you again for having me on. My name is Katie Ringsmith.
Oh, and I'm sorry about the last name.
That's okay. That's okay. Yes, this was... We started working on the agenda for this program in January, so we have really been putting a lot of effort into it so that we could give Alaska the kind of 50th birthday party that it deserved.
Well, the details were extraordinary, and it was amazing to look around and see all the living icons of Alaska right there in the room with you, not only presenting but also enjoying the various presentations.
Oh, I think so. I think Thursday when we were at Lusac Library was a particularly important day. We had Vic Fisher, Katie Hurley, and Jack Coghill, of course, the Constitutional Convention participants, talking about that very important document that they wrote. And we had made the effort of inviting several of Anchorage School District students to participate in the audience. They had put together questions for the delegates and for Katie, and they were thoughtful and evoking, and there was a moment at the end when Katie Hurley really talked about, you know, what their purpose was. It was really about the children of Alaska, and I thought that moment really crystallized the whole point of this conference, that it was absolutely a tribute to what Alaska has experienced over the last 50 years, but it was also designed to be a roadmap for the next 50 years. And the students in that audience are going to be taking on a lot of responsibility, and it really was about providing a kind of compass for Alaskans for the next 50 years.
I think that did happen. It also inspired the individual young students as well as older individuals that you can make a difference.
Absolutely. I think that's the most important message that we tried to convey, is that 50 years ago, ordinary people accomplished something pretty extraordinary, and that Alaskan characteristic continues today and is being passed on, that ordinary people can make a difference. And again, you know, having Katie John appear at our conference and saying these powerful words was, beyond touching. It was truly an extraordinary historic moment.
And she was also celebrating her 93rd birthday.
Yes.
And she was one of the few people who did not need a mic.
Yes.
You could hear her loudly and clearly, and it was very exciting.
I should mention, too, that Fran Ulmer, the chancellor of the University of Alaska Anchorage, gave a real nice passing of the torch to the students who were in attendance, saying that right after we sang or heard the Alaska flag song, she said, you know, we should be singing this. We should not be watching. And that's really how Alaska needs to be going into the future, that we don't sit around and watch other people do things,
that we need
to participate. Mm-hmm. And the conference was co-sponsored by the University of Alaska statewide, and then we had a fair amount of participation by UAA and UAF staff and students helping put the whole thing together.
Well, the details, I can't even imagine the details of putting this together. I mean, you know, they say the devil's in the details. Well, you guys thought of everything, from that wonderful luncheon at the Aviation Center on that final day.
Oh, yeah, it was really something. I mean, from our keynote, Sven Hawkinson, again, a significant leader, an Alaska visionary, I think, for certainly my generation and the future of Alaska. We had Dermot Cole talking about his book and providing new information and analysis about statehood. We had Willie Hensley talk a little bit about his book. We had Jim Carrey and Andrew Beluda from Iliamna come talk about the significance of linguistics and language as, really the essence of one's culture. We had Alan Boris talking about sustainability, certainly Deborah Williams, that was an important theme as she addressed. And we had a scholar from Western Washington, also a linguist, Dr. Edward Veda, who in his important work on the Ket people of Russia and connecting their language to the Dena'ina speakers here in Alaska, I mean, that was extraordinary. He was doing nothing less than providing evidence for the Barry Lambridge theory. I mean, this was at our conference. Brian Tracy John Tracy was, the face of Channel 2 for so many years. He talked about the history and the role of television in the last 50 years. So it was really just, you could go on and on with the faces and the voices of
Right, and Leo Morgan, I was impressed with, Leo shared the history of journalists, and many of the leaders, especially the Alaska State Committee, were journalists like Bob Atwood.
Right, and a lot of the early governors were newspapermen, too, just the power of the press.
Yes. Yeah, I love that story that Ernest Greening encouraged and invited Edna Ferber to write The Ice Palace as a lobbying tool for statehood.
Certainly we had historians and journalists, but we also had, for example, artists. Kessler Woodward was there to talk a little bit about imagery and the role of visual art.
And how that influences people. Mm-hmm. Well, were you guys there at that final conversation, the civic engagement conversation?
Yes.
Talk about that a little bit. I thought that was incredible.
Well, there was a panel put together by the UAA staff that included eight different panelists, Carol Como, Gus Woodward. I'm trying to think of
Liz
all
Cheney
the names.
From First Alaska.
Sven Hawkinson, Steve Heimel participated in that.
And again, Deborah Williams, who is so powerful
and
inspiring.
But they were discussing, where are we going? Where have we been? And it was a statewide teleconference. They had audio-video hookup to audiences at the university in Fairbanks as well as down at the university in Juneau. And so it really was a civic conversation, kind of exploring some of these issues that Alaska is facing going forward. There was one speaker, John Havelock, earlier in the conference, who mentioned that our political and financial situation is not unlike, in some ways, the way Alaska was when it first became a state back in 59, just because the oil is running out, that party will end at some point, that our influence in Congress is not what it once was, and that he termed threw it out as a discussion point that maybe Alaska is in its second infancy. And I thought that was an interesting thing to wrestle with. He was calling for us to stop letting others do things for us, that we need to start doing things for ourselves a little more. I thought that was quite a challenge.
Definitely. And they also were exploring the idea, because Alaskans like to think of themselves, we are special, we are different, and how that may or may not be true as citizens of the state.
Right, the old exceptionality discussion, that we're exceptional, that we're rugged pioneers, and yet we seem to stand around with our hands out quite a bit, too. So there's a little bit of both in all of us, I think.
Right, and the continuing argument about the best use of the permanent fund, and in the history of the permanent fund, and people trying to revisit the permanent fund for maybe using it in different ways.
Right.
Well, I think another really significant achievement in this conference was to really showcase many of our city's cultural venues. For example, the Lusac Library, what an important place for people to come together. Certainly, the campus, UAA, again, a place where people can come together to talk about important things, but also the Anchorage Museum and the Aviation Museum. I think that's a little hidden treasure. I mean, it was fantastic. If you have any interest, my 2-year-old son is obsessed with airplanes. He was so excited. And certainly the event that capped the night, the Alaska Day Polaris lecture at Wendy Williams, we had Senator Daniel Inouye speak, as well as Mayor Begich and Attorney General Talis Kohlberg. And it was really an extraordinary night. It was something.
Tolberg was very good at connecting with the students who were in that audience, in how he phrased things, in the context of film and characters and things that they could relate to, and it just made it all come quite alive.
I think so, too. It was certainly a wonderful evening, I thought.
And I enjoyed, of course, they were very early get-together, 7 a.m., with all the people who were the curators and leaders of all the smaller museums around Alaska, of which we have many phenomenal ones as well. In fact, the Kodiak Museum won with their newsletter, didn't they? The best newsletter in the
Right. We
state.
Have an annual award that the Alaska Historical Society gives to the best historical newsletter, and the Kodiak Historical Society won this year, and they do put out a gorgeous newsletter. They have a great operation over there. I was over there just a year ago and was able to give a talk to their
nice.
Annual meeting. I'd only been there once before. Just a really amazing place. Their headquarters is the oldest frame structure on the west coast of North America. It's the Erskine House or Baranoff House that was built by the Russian America Company 200 years ago this year and is still standing and in use as their museum and headquarters. Just an amazing place.
I have a question for you. I did not attend the conference, so I'm interested in what you're saying. But I'm curious, as historians, in all the presentations that were given, what ideas or opinions surprised you?
Well, I don't know if it was so much of a surprise, but I think one of the ongoing continuous themes, whether it was, you know, from the journalist or it was from in the dignitaries or whether it was from some of our indigenous speakers, I think what was so important was this idea of Alaska, that somehow people think of Alaska as being the end of the road, somehow the final extension of Western culture, Western migration. We're the last, the end of something. But what I found, and you know, especially with people like Advaita, who were making these important connections, that Alaska's position, whether we're talking about history or, you know, certainly within this Pacific world, that we are in really the center. We're in many ways the leading, cutting edge of a discussion on the environment, for example. Mm-hmm. Certainly a discussion on cultures, linguistics, politics.
Potential alternative energy.
Exactly. So. That Alaska, we are in a central position, that we as historians and really the interpreters of our history, you know, I think it's really time to stop talking about us and ourselves as the end of anything. Yeah, we are in the center. We're in the middle, and we no longer should be marginalized. This was, I think, the most important thing to come out of this conference, that it's time for us to take that position in a leading role in the world.
Ideas or opinions that might have surprised you?
Well, just the whole crossroads idea, just building on what Katie was saying, that Alaska, rather than being the end of the road, is a crossroads. An example of that, I think, is in the presentation we had by Sven Håkansson mm-hmm. from the Aleutic Museum yeah. in Kodiak. He was our keynote speaker. And just this last week here in Anchorage, an exhibit of Aleutic masks opened at the Anchorage Museum. These masks were collected by a 19-year-old Frenchman on Kodiak Island back in the 1870s and have been in France ever since. And Sven heard about these as a student, I believe, and nurtured a relationship with this French museum. Finally took a group of 8 or 10 Aleutic people from Kodiak over to France a couple of years ago. They were very interested in these masks, which were unlike anything that was left on the island today, or anything in American museums for that matter. And Sven was successful in bringing these back to this country. These masks, at one point in their history, were on display in Paris. And according to Sven, they inspired some of the Cubist artists of the early 20th century, such as Pablo Picasso.
And you know, you can see them right now mm-hmm. in Anchorage, and they are powerful and
they
magical.
They are. But I put that out as an example of this crossroads thing. I mean, imagine Pablo Picasso being inspired by masks from Kodiak, mm-hmm. collected by a 19-year-old who spent his family fortune paddling around in a skin boat and looking at these things in far-off Alaska. These things went to France. Now they're back in Alaska. Who knows what's next? On my way over here, I was listening to KSKA, as I always do, and there was a piece about the opening of the Northwest Passage, and there was an interview with a man in a sailboat who had just gone through this last year, and talking about the opening with the global warming, the opening of the Northwest Passage, and how boat traffic is causing Nome to look at their infrastructure for their harbor because they expect more boat traffic. You know, we really aren't the end of the line anymore. The world is opening up.
Right.
Another question I have that I'd like to ask historians, you know, reading the Anchorage Daily News just this past week, you begin to realize that there's a real threat to the villages of Alaska. The price of heating oil could be the last straw to break the camel's back of the economic viability of a lot of native villages. This could be an important moment in Alaskan history. Speak about the consequences if the native villages' financial structures were sufficiently weakened to drive people out of them.
Oh, I think it would be a terrible, terrible loss to Alaskans, to our culture, to our identity. I thought one of the most powerful moments in the conference was when Alan Boris was talking about Dena'ina culture and its sustainability. You know, for thousands of years, no species ever went extinct in Alaska due to, any native culture. You know, species are only going, are only becoming threatened today here in Alaska within the last century. And I think that it would be certainly to Alaska's service to, at least in the context of history, is to look at the sustainability of Alaska Native cultures.
It's the culture that we really are talking about.
Exactly.
I mean, it may not be the physical village for overcome by whatever physical reasons.
Right, and it's so important that we do everything we can to preserve these villages. I think that urban Alaskans may not appreciate how important rural Alaska is to us generally, and we would be losing. It's almost impossible to put into words what is at stake here. And I think that more urban Alaskans, it would be very important for them to visit rural Alaska if they have not yet had a chance, because there's extraordinary people in the villages. They live by traditions, for thousands of years that have been sustainable, and it's really only through being forced to change that has put themselves at risk. And I think that it talk about endangered species. We should do everything we can to preserve rural Alaska.
Yeah, in fact, Jack Dalton and Allison Warden are writing a play about that called Time Immemorial.
There were a number of speakers at our conference talking about out-migration, which is a term we're going to be hearing more and more about. I heard something else on KSK a week ago about an interview with somebody in the Nome School District talking about how they'd lost, how enrollment was down 10% this year from last year. The villages are losing population to the urban centers, and it will have a huge effect on cultures. And this is something that had already happened in the Russian Far East with the fall of the Soviet Union and the loss of federal funding to support small villages. Many of them consolidated or were abandoned completely. And
so the Soviet federal government was supporting native culture, and the subsequent government did not.
Exactly, exactly. They didn't have that support from the central government anymore, so they're left on their own and suffered.
From a historian's point of view, too, I mean, I just want to say, too, that change happens and occurs all the time in history. I just wrote a dissertation on the Central Alaska Peninsula, and people have been encountering great catastrophes throughout history, whether it's massive volcanoes erupting, tsunamis that affect food systems that have nearly wiped out entire populations. You know, disease is another. And what I have found to be the case is that Alaskans are very resilient people. And I think that's an important lesson that we can draw from history and hopefully apply that to the present.
Yeah, that's situation. Part of what Jack wants to write about is the adaptability
mm-hmm.
of
yes.
Native people. And also I wanted to touch on what you were saying too, Bruce, is that Swin is a remarkable example of what's happening to a lot of young Native people who are appreciating their identity and culture, go on the outside, come educated, but they return and enrich the villages, or in his case, Kodiak Island.
Yeah, and that's where the hope is, that more of that will continue, of course.
Right, and then the university also is trying to make things easier for Native students to become educated, to bridge that transitional life, and also to inspire them to return.
Right, and I think that we do live in different times. I think that Alaska Native peoples today are certainly not ashamed to be Alaska Native. It is a source of pride, and that pride is transmitted to all Alaskans. Alaska Native cultures is something for all Alaskans to really be incredibly proud of.
Oh, absolutely. It's something very special about Alaska. Yeah. And matter of fact, tonight, Wednesday, First Alaskans is having a special symposium about First Alaskans, the Native people of Alaska, and their perspective on statehood, which I think would be very, very interesting as part of the AFN.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that discussion continues, the good and the bad effects of statehood. It's not necessarily all positive.
No, nope. Right. People might be surprised.
Exactly.
Right.
I wanted to just touch on one other thing, too. Katie had mentioned that Dermot Cole was here. He's a longtime columnist for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner and also an author of a number of books. And our Alaska Historical Society supported him in writing a new book, which was just released for our conference by Epicenter Press. It's called North to the Future, and it's an overview of the history of Alaska during the last 50 years since statehood. Some of us don't think of it that as history since we lived a lot of it, but it is history, and there are some remarkable things he did in this book, uncovered some new material that was unfamiliar to me. One incident that stuck out for me was during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962, a U-2 spy plane out of Eielson Air Force Base was flying north towards the pole and got disoriented. I understand that navigation gets very confusing as you approach the North Pole, and jet planes scrambled to intercept him. There was almost an international incident that may have included nuclear warheads, and this was averted, but I'd never heard of that before.
Wow. I'm sure there are lots of such side stories like that. And although this conference is now, well, it's history, I know that there are going to be many more exciting events, and I'm hoping that this program and the conference will spark a lot more history buffs in our state, particularly this year when there are so many exciting things happening. And I want to thank you, Bruce, and you, Katie. You have to come one more time to tell us how you personally got inspired to history.
I'd like to mention quickly, if I could, we're talking about the Alaska Historical Society and their annual conference. If you want more information about the society, go to our website, which is alaskahistoricalsociety.org. And we do have an annual meeting every year. We're meeting next year either in Unalaska, Fairbanks, or Whitehorse. We haven't decided yet, but we'll announce that.
Do you want to repeat that website just one more time?
It's alaskahistoricalsociety.org.
Thank you guys so much for being here, and thank you all for listening, and join us again next month for another edition of Alaska Radio Reader Rambler.